Welcome to the Practice Podcast, a show created by lawyers to help lawyers in life and business without all the complicated lawyer language. Let's welcome Bast Amron founders and your hosts, Jeff Bast and Brett Amron.
Hi there, this is Jeff. Welcome to a special edition of the Practice Podcast. This episode is a recording from Bast Amron's 6th Annual Business Advantage Forum, which took place on January 18th, 2024. The forum is a learning and networking event we host and underwrite each year with all proceeds donated to a charitable organization. This year, our theme was Connections, how to balance emotional intelligence with artificial intelligence in today's workplace. And we donated the proceeds from the event to Legal Services of Greater Miami, an organization that provides free legal services for the low-income communities of Miami-Dade and Monroe counties. This panel is called Digital Burnout: Strategies for Managing the Customer Experience in the Age of Technology. Traditionally, we have embraced technology as a means to streamline processes and remove the hassle from the lives of our employees for the benefit of our customers. But customer service has evolved with customers demanding human interaction, and more than ever, customers crave experience above all else. That does not mean price and quality take a back seat, though. Both still play a part, but our focus is shifting to the way we experience the process of choosing, purchasing, and enjoying the goods and services we spend our money on. Our panel of experts will dive into this evolving challenge to give the customer an immersive experience. The discussion will include this topic and others. We hope you enjoy this recording, and you can find more recordings from prior years here on the podcast or on our website at bastamron.com/news.
Welcome, everyone. For our second panel, the topic is digital burnout, managing the customer experience in the age of technology. So we have some great panelists with us today. First, we have Elliot Basner. Elliot is Vice President and Associate General Counsel of Chewy, Inc. You may know it. It's a pretty popular company to buy your dog food. He's been with the company since 2017, serving in various positions, including interim GC, overseeing all aspects of Chewy's legal, compliance, risk, insurance, and ESG functions. Elliot has more than 25 years of legal experience with wide-ranging expertise, including technology, e-commerce, intellectual property, and data privacy and security, all relevant here. Elliot has previously held several leadership roles at Diageo, where he spent 15 years. He has a bachelor's degree from the University of Michigan and a JD from Cardozo.
I didn't want to brag.
Next up, we have Abe Ng. Abe is the founder and CEO of Sushimaki, a leader in innovative Japanese cuisine. He oversees 25 locations, owned and operate under the Sushimaki and Canton Chinese brand names. And he's a partner with Whole Foods Markets for sushi stations in the South Florida region stores. In 2018, Sushimaki was awarded the Whole Foods Market Supplier of the Year Award in the Florida region. Abe is a Miami native, serves on several boards, and has been recognized as one of Miami Herald's 20 Under 40 and South Florida Business Journal's 40 Under 40. And finally, last but not least, we have Terry Vento. Terry is the General Counsel and Senior Director for Legal and Government Affairs at the Perez Art Museum in Miami. A lot of you will know it under the acronym PAM, which I'll also use. Terry's joined PAM as its first in-house General Counsel in 2015, after working for years as a partner with a large law firm and serving for 27 years with the museum's Board of Trustees. Terry provides legal guidance and education regarding best practices for both the board and staff. Terry regularly participates on panels on art and museum law issues and has been awarded for her work, including being named Top In-House Counsel 2017 by the Dade County Bar Association. Terry is a double gator and has a BS with highest honors and a JD from the University of Florida. Just to level set, in the first panel, it was inward facing, right? In this panel, we're talking about the outward facing of impact of technology, the impact of technology on customers and end users. And I think, based on our first panel, I think we can all agree that there have been dramatic changes in the past few years, and especially the past few years, right? So let's talk about some of them, the first being communication styles. How have communication styles changed in the digital age? Terry?
Well, there's nothing like in-person communication at all. I mean, that goes without saying. But I think it can be enhanced significantly by technology. In the past, you had a telephone call. I mean, who does just telephone calls when you have three or four people anymore? It's Zoom or FaceTime or whatever. And so I do think that the change has been that you can remotely see people's expressions, get the body language, understand what's appropriate and what's not to say. And in business, that's truly important. So I do think that one of the silver linings of the pandemic was that we all learned what Zoom was all about. And I don't think it's going away anytime soon. If we get a request for a conference, rarely does anyone say, let's just do it by telephone. I think that's changed a lot.
Right. And what about you, Elliot?
We're an e-commerce retailer. So for us, consumers can buy anything. They have high expectations. They want everything right away. They want it to be easy. So as a company, we need to meet or exceed the expectations of consumers today. How do we do that? It really depends on what the consumers are looking for, and we need to figure that out. And first, we collect a lot of data about customers. They come to our site. We know what they're looking at, what products they might be interested in. They give us their personal information, name, you know, email address, telephone number, address, their pet information. So we try to use that to anticipate what a customer might want. You want a cat, you don't really care about the dog food. Then you need to figure out what the scenarios are. Are they looking for new products? If so, they might come into our site, right? We need to make sure that we're trying to anticipate what that consumer needs using all the data and the technology we have to do that. Because if not, they'll just go to another site very quickly. If they're looking for new products, you also have to think about search engines. They type in the search. We want our ads to come up first. We want it to be relevant. The content needs to be relevant so they can go to our site. The pricing needs to be relevant, a wide customer selection, right? It needs to be, honestly, perfect. Otherwise, there'll be five other companies. We're competing with Amazon, PetSmart, Petco, and a lot of others. Is the customer having a problem? They'll call our customer service. We need that to be impeccable, and we'll get into that a little bit. Our customer service, we are very intent. It's a growth vehicle for us. It's not a cost center. And as we talk about more, you'll see how that makes a difference because a lot of people, we've all had bad customer experiences when we call different companies. Also, did someone post anything on a social media site? We monitor and we track every mention of Chewy and respond directly or immediately or figure out what the issues are that might be bubbling up and have to react really quickly. So everything's more immediate and more demanding by the customer, and we need to be able to meet that or exceed their expectations and be there and answer what they want.
And I think that's a good segue. So maybe we dig a little deeper on it. I think there's two ways you could look at it. Well, there's multiple, but how about we talk about how you reach new customers and how you reach existing customers? We can start with new. What advances have you seen in the way that we can reach new customers with technology?
Maybe I'll take that. Online ordering was certainly present before the pandemic, but it's certainly accelerated. And kind of third-party partners, whether it's Uber Eats or DoorDash, everybody use a ton of those platforms here. That is how we engage with new customers as well as retain customers. The big to-do for every restaurateur right now is how do you get them to order on your own native app? And everybody wants that Starbucks experience, that Chick-fil-A experience. But when you're a small company like Sushimaki, you don't have a development team. So our task is to kind of look at what's available, white label-wise, and customize it and give that same experience. But as hard as we try, it's really hard to compete with the convenience of DoorDash and Uber Eats. And from a catering perspective, if you're catering for your office, Easy Cater, these are really great platforms. And we just have to find a way to attract new customers, and how they make money a lot of times is ad revenue. So what we have to figure out is giving BOGOs or paying for ads to be higher in the carousel. That's how we get you to choose Sushimaki over almost every other sushi place in town. That placement is super important. So I'm happy to talk more about, if we're talking about outward facing technology, how we kind of view that. It's almost a third of our business now is all digital ordering. If we can kind of tilt more of that towards native, so we don't have to pay the commissions of 15 to 20%, that makes all the difference between it working and not working for a restaurateur.
And what about on your end, Elliot?
New customers are sort of the lifeline of our company. We currently have about just over 20 million. Over the last 7 years that I've been there, it's grown tremendously. And again, it's really hard to get those new customers. And each company will have a different view, right? Our pet customers, a baby company will have, you know, new parents. Someone's looking for a car, right? Totally different. So you need to know who your customers are and how to get them. There's many vehicles in which we do that. The first and most important thing is our website. It needs to have relevant content, right? You're a cat owner. You want to see cat food, cat treats, cat litter. Same thing with dogs, whatever it might be. We need a wide selection of products. We need price competitive. The checkout needs to be easy. Any friction within the shopping experience, consumers will immediately click off and go to Amazon, PetSmart, whatever it might be. So we need to be perfect in that, almost perfect. And we're continually upping our game at literally every day with their tweaks to the site. So the website is critical. And then if a new customer is right, typically people are going for online. They're going to a search engine. They're going to type something in. Again, just like Abe was saying, you need to have the ads for your company come up with the right pricing, with the right content, whether it's on Google or it could be even the ads and, you know, Instagrams, any social media site. And then you got to also do the traditional media, right? TV, out of home, radio, right? There's no one channel that will win the game. You need to sort of be present. And the magic is really, you have a finite amount of money, is where do you put your money? And we have teams that literally every day are tweaking a little more in TV, or this time of year we do more TV, or now we need more Google ads, right? And for us, since we're online, right, the search engine stuff, we got a team of people just dealing with that. And I attend weekly meetings where they're tracking it. The amount of data and detail that we get to track it is unbelievable. It's like mind-numbing. It's too much almost. So there's all of that in the advertising. And then for us, which is a competitive advantage for us, because most companies don't do it this way, is our customer service. So if someone has an issue, they might go online, they might see Chewy, they'll give a call because they just got a puppy, they don't know what to do. So they'll call our customer service team. You won't get a recording. Someone picks up within two or three rings and they will go out of their way to make it the best experience you've ever had. Again, we don't look at it as a cost center. Most companies, you go cable, right? You know, telephone companies, it's a nightmare. To call them, you get an automated recording, they transfer you, you have to authenticate yourself, then you tell your story, and then they say, oh, we have to transfer you, and you have to do it all over again. You will get someone to pick up the phone and answer all your questions, that one person. So that to us is a huge competitive advantage that most companies won't put the time and money because they look at it as a cost center. One funny story is that my cousin Monday called me. He's like, oh, my dog needs this prescription food in, you know, 2 days and I can't find it anywhere. It was in Boca or Delray or something. I was like, you know, I'm on the legal team here. I'm not working in a fulfillment center. So he's like, you can't do anything. I said, call our customer service. They will take care of you. Boom, he called them, took care of everything. He was nervous to call, like they'd used us before, but maybe not for this type of food. Boom, they took care of it. So it makes a huge difference whether you're going to keep a customer or lose a customer, maybe for your lifetime.
And how about you, Terry?
Well, as far as technology, you know, how is technology helping the museum get new customers, new people who would never have perhaps walked in the door? Sometimes it comes through social media. You know, if you're on Instagram, fortunately, we have wonderful people who we don't pay, but that certainly enjoy the museum. And of course, they post. And the next thing you know, it's that exponential thing. But also with the ability now to digitize art, what we're able to do is to make wonderful images of the works in our collection and put them on our website. And that means that if you're kind of interested in art or you somehow come across, you know, I wonder, that artist I heard about, Kehinde Wiley, you know, he's done the portrait of Obama, and do a little research. And next thing you know, the image pops up and it's here at PAM. Oh, never heard about PAM. And the next thing you know, one by one in our website, you become introduced to a whole new world. We also have the artwork, of course, but in addition, for customer enjoyment, we have the PAM shop, which has wonderful things. I'm wearing one of the necklaces there because we have artists who actually we contract with to give a lot of our works. So you find things there that you wouldn't find anywhere else. And that's, again, part of the customer experience. And then someone wears this and they talk about it and they put it online. The next thing you know, people come to the shop. And they're in the shop. Well, the next thing you know, they're seeing the art. And of course, we have Verde, the place to eat. That's a great thing. It's outside on the door, you know, in the water. So it's a combination of all of those things where technology complements the things that people, you know, if they would just come to a museum because they like coming to a museum, they're pleasantly surprised. There's more than they originally thought. Now, the good thing about technology is that it can help you. The bad thing about technology is it can instantly doom you unless you keep up that great customer service, and we'll be talking about that.
Let's move on from new and potential customers to existing customers. Let's talk about how we connect with those existing customers. I'll kind of break it down into two buckets. The first is business to consumer. How does the business interact with the consumer? And the second will be, how does technology help the consumer actually interact with the business, or does it? So just starting with the first, how has technology changed how businesses interact with the consumer?
I think when you do business with us, we can push notification to you on the app to remind you if it's a playoff game to order. So the trick of that is not to be invasive. When you're sending emails out, we look at the unsubscribe. So it's always kind of a delicate balance to see how much communication can you put before people start turning you off. So we're very kind of sensitive to that. The second part is, how do consumers interact with us? In our physical spaces, in our restaurants, we have kiosks where you can order. And we were always romantic about wanting people to have a great tableside experience or have the ability to explain the food, what's in the rolls. But when I went into a Panera with my daughter, who was 11 years old at the time, they would much rather deal with a kiosk rather than have the interaction with a human. So I just think that as we kind of developed our prototype of Sushi Maki of the future, we really looked at Shake Shack and Panera and how they were building restaurants. And that's what we came up with. It's probably not the way I would want to do business at a restaurant, but I think that people really just have different expectations. And what we always talk about is, how do we get people to put us on repeat? That Amazon experience where it's as few clicks as possible. And one last anecdote is, it's unbelievable how people don't want to even enter in their credit card. That ability to save the number makes all the difference between a frictionless experience and one that's a little more clunky.
And so, Terry, the museum has ways of reaching out to existing customers.
Yes. Too. For example, we're talking about the ability to immediately address the payment, et cetera, et cetera. We have digital membership cards. So instead of having to carry around, oh my gosh, I forgot my card, you know, look me up, et cetera. Now you can put it in your Apple Wallet. When you come in, you get your 10% discount at the shop and 10% at the Verde. It's all right there. But also for that customer experience, we also have newsletters. If you come to an event at the museum, you know, and there's wonderful photos, which of course we do have the disclaimer that we're taking your photo, but we also find that people enjoy seeing themselves on the website, bringing their families with, of course, the releases by those mothers and fathers. We've had to deal with some of that. But again, that interaction is really important, and keeping the relationships fresh and new and exciting, and having families be able to come and use technology. We'll be talking about digital tours. For example, maybe slide 3, we can show you. We have an app. If you want to come to the museum and you want to know like what's coming up, what we do is we have ability for people to look ahead to see, well, what is it that the museum has up right now? Any of those particular we're interested in? You say, I'm coming to Pam. What's up on the walls? What's up on the ceilings? And what's in the sculpture garden? It's not just up on the walls anymore. So you get a chance to look ahead and see what might be interesting to you. And then when you're there, you can use the app and you can get a tour that's a person speaking, one of our education people speaking and pulling it all together. Technology allows people to personalize their visit that way too.
Right. And Elliot, this is one area you're mentioning. Chewy has a CRM team.
Yep. So there's lots of technology about thinking about how you work with an existing customer, right? You don't want to annoy them with too much, too little. You still want to make sales. You want to show them relevant content. So we have a CRM team, customer relationship marketing team. All day they look at what channels, who are the customers. They're all different segments of customers. People have puppies, people have sick dogs or cats or chickens, horses. Who are they? What content should we be giving them? How often? Through what channel? It could be email, text, app, direct mail, right? It could be TV. So they look at this and they look at the mix and we try to perfect it. And again, it changes on who the customer is, what stage of the pet ownership they're in, what's going on with them. There's probably a team of like at least 20 people who just do that all day long. And then we'll go back to the customer service, which you'll guess at this point is a theme of Chewy, certain technologies to make it better for the customer. So when someone calls customer service, we have technology that will try to anticipate what they're talking about. Do they have an order that just shipped? Maybe it's a problem with the order. Do they have a prescription that's coming up? Do they have an upcoming auto ship order, which I'll get to in a little bit? So we try to predict and direct it to the right customer service agent. As I mentioned before, the most annoying thing is spend time authenticating, telling your problem. They go, oh, we got to transfer you. If you don't get disconnected, you have to do it again and maybe two or three more times. We don't want that. Like anything we don't want our customers to go through. And so we have technology to try to perfect that and anticipate that. We also have technology that takes in all the data from the calls, from online, social media sites, and bring it all together to really understand like the voice of the customer. What are the issues that are coming up, good and bad? And how do we react to that? An example might be all of a sudden a few customers are calling it about some pet food that maybe there was something wrong with the mold on it or something, right? If you're in brick and mortar, it's going to take forever for you to figure that out where it bubbles up to the corporate, where they figure it out. We will know very quickly. We can pull it off the site so other customers won't have a bad experience. We can call customers where we've recently shipped it to in the last 2 weeks, say, hey, we're going to replace that with something new. We'll call the manufacturer immediately, have them dig into it. So it's all very instantaneous of how we could react to customer issues, good and bad. We might say, oh, Chewy did this, is great. So we might do more of it. A lot of technology that we use, again, to make it as easy as possible for the customer and anticipate their needs.
Moving on from the business to the consumer, let's look at how the consumer interacts with the business. And I think there's some new and immersive experience, new ways that customers can interact with the business. So Terry, I know there's some immersive art.
Yes. You know, we used to go to a museum and it was kind of like going to church. You'd walk in and you'd see the things on the wall and it was hushed. And it was kind of an individual experience. Not anymore. At least for contemporary art, it's much more interactive. So for example, right now we have still up a wonderful infinity room by a Japanese artist, Yayoi, as she pronounces it, Kusama. And it's wonderful. You go in there and you'll see later on in our presentation a little video that has some of it. You walk in and you hear her voice speaking in Japanese, reciting a poem that she has written. You go in there, you have 2 or 3 minutes to be in the room, and you are surrounded by tentacles with polka dots. I wore polka dots today in her honor. So you walk out of that and then you see the translation of the poem on the wall and you can read it. So it's that having customers come and not just look, but participate. If you look over on the screen, you see a woman sitting in a pool. Now, how can this be? She looks like she's not wet. Well, this was an immersive, technically and literally, experience that we just closed up and was up for about a year with Leandro Ehrlich, who is an Argentinian artist who takes illusion and takes reality and twists it a little bit. It was wonderful because people then start to look at things with a different eye. And that's one of the things that museums are hoping for people to do, is step out of their day-to-day experience and see the world through other people's eyes. That kind of immersive kind of experience has been very, very popular.
And Elliot, the Chewy website is important.
Yeah, we have a website, and I'll give a couple examples as well. We'll show something we launched about 2 years ago called Connect with a Vet. It's teletriage. So if you have an issue with your pet, you can do a video chat or just a chat with a vet or a vet technician. They're not prescribing, diagnosing, or treating anything, but you can get some quick answers to an issue you might have, or questions you might have. Your dog ate some chocolate. What should you do? And if there's somewhere you need to go to the vet, we'll say, go to your vet. If they don't have one, we'll direct them to one. There's urgent care, because often it could be like at 2 a.m, something happened to the pet. What do you do? It's really great to have that tool to be able to address the customer's needs and the pet's needs. They'll say, oh, you really need to go to urgent care. We'll tell you where to go. Or, hey, you're all right. Just give some water, whatever it might be. So it's a really great tool for us to provide the customers something online, right? Because today we're not clinics, but we announced we're going to launch them soon. But it's a great way to meet those needs. And then again, from a customer service point of view, I could maybe show a couple of videos and then I can explain it after, if you would.
So for those of you that didn't know, Chewy sends a handwritten birthday card to your pet. I keep mine on the fridge, and this is Chanel's. She got this one for turning one, and as you can see, it is handwritten and so cute. So she's expecting another one in March for turning two, and I plan on keeping mine every year that she gets it, and it is just so cute. Highly recommend.
I got the sweetest surprise from Chewy today. I opened it up. There was this really sweet card in there. And then there was this awesome painting of Daisy. I mean, look at it. It's so stinking cute and it's so perfect. I was not expecting this at all, and it made my entire day. Thank you so much, Chewy.
So I will say, when we were preparing for this panel, we looked at these videos. My family adopted a dog in 2020. And while we were preparing for this panel, I just looked at this video, and lo and behold, what came in for me was a card addressed to me.
Not planted, by the way.
It is, in fact, handwritten and is addressed to Fergie, my dog. It says, "May your birthday be filled with tasty treats and endless cuddles. Visit our birthday shop and take 20% off on us."
I didn't handwrite that. But I get those and I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And I work there. So again, within our customer service team, we have what's called the WOW team. And literally all they do, they're meant to WOW the customer. So they have all these different programs. One is handwritten birthday cards that go to the pet, not the parent. People love it. I mean, you go online, you go on TikTok, Twitter, whatever it is, you'll see a million of these. And you're like, all right, well, that's millions of customers. That's got to be really expensive. But then you look at this. They stay with you forever. Chewy cares. They love that Chewy does care, and they're there for them in all the good and bad moments. And they'll post it. It'll go viral. So if you look at it, a cost center versus a growth driver, again, you look at how you manage customer service or how you have a customer service team very differently. And in the portrait, often it's just random. Like people will upload their photos of their pets into their, it's called the pet profile, and we'll randomly go around, pick them, and we hire artists all around the country who go and paint the portrait. And we have a customer service center in Hollywood. I was there not long ago, and they have a wall of all these portraits. And you're like, oh, these are amazing. They're like, no, these are the ones that weren't perfect enough to send out. So we had to have redo it. And when you're looking, you're like, there's no way you could figure out what was wrong. It was like one little line was wrong, or it wasn't perfectly matched to the pet. It didn't look great. So there's a really high bar. And when people receive these for no reason, you know, you see the reaction. They love it. They'll stay with you forever. And then they'll post it. It's an amazing ability to give us this experience that you, Chewy, are there and you care about them. You celebrate them. It's an amazing retention tool.
So to some extent, is it fair to say that the technology allows the customers to control the experience as well, so they are getting a value add as well? It's that omni-channel experience. Terry, I think you have PAM TV.
Yeah, we just started something where I think this is one of the few, if not the first in the nation on this, where a museum has its own Netflix. A museum has not just art that's on the walls, it has digital art, it has films, it has sculptures, etc. Well, for the films that are in our collection, you can't show them all the time. In fact, you can't show a lot of things all the time, or it would degrade the artwork. What do you do? How do you let people know about that? Well, what we've done is we've created this Netflix kind of experience where, for free, you sign up. We have arrangements with not just what we have in our own collection, but also with film festivals, et cetera, where they will allow us to show on PAM TV what they are planning to show or will show in their film festivals. So this is a very personalized thing. People can pick and choose what they want that way. Also personalizing is our tours. Actually, just this morning, we opened up an hour early for a very specialized tour for homeschooled children who have autoimmune issues and their families. So for an hour, we had a tour for just them, closed everything off, had all our staff wear our masks, and gave them a tour because otherwise they would never have been able to come to a museum. And then we also have tours. If you look on our website, everything from general tours to specialized to a particular exhibition. We have those that are focused on pride issues, those on black issues, those on Asian issues, because we have, everybody has a little something that they want to look and see on the wall that reflects them or their understanding. And so by doing that, we really make that a personal experience, even though I can walk in and have a totally different experience than the next person, because of the way we have ability to kind of bring it home to you.
So we've talked about how technology can help the interaction between the business and the consumer, and vice versa, the consumer to the business. But is there any role for continuing direct human connection?
So, yeah, I think that people are really hesitant to talk and confront. In the past, when people weren't happy and when a manager does a table touch, if they didn't like their food, you could ask about, you seem to not like it, can I get you something else? But we've had to train our managers is to kind of look at the people who are typing furiously in their phone and giving us a one-star review on Yelp or TripAdvisor. And what we try to do is anticipate a guest recovery moment and do it in the moment. And I think this generation is just very uncomfortable with telling somebody that they just didn't like it. So what we have done is, and this is not the best in terms of kind of just like work-life balance, but when we get a one-star review, we get an alert. We have to bounce it back to the restaurant to see if we can catch the guest in the moment to fix it. And when we do that, it's amazing that that one-star turns into a five-star immediately. So they're just so blown away by that. But we just can't figure out kind of a more, and maybe the Chewy team could figure us out how to do that wow moment. But it is insane. And it's one of the hardest things to be a restaurant manager today, dealing with people that just want to post your one star. And all we get is one in fives. I don't think we're that. We're like probably, if it's bad, it's maybe a two or a three-star experience. We're not always five. But I just think that we see that on Uber too. We're either one or five. But we just got to get that five more because some people don't even consider going to a restaurant unless you're four or higher. That's the bar that we have internally. And how do we kind of continue to have that guest interaction and give those blow away experiences?
Right. And it sounds like from Chewy's perspective, this is where the customer service.
Yeah. And again, and we'll show maybe a couple examples. People want their issues answered right away and they want compassion, understanding, and an immediate feedback. I brought a couple examples here of the one on the left with the coffee mug or the soup mug. A customer called, I think they were customer service, they had an issue. They mentioned they were sick or had the flu. So our customer service agents, they have a lot of freedom to do a number of things, using technology to be able to do it. Sent the customer, for no reason, a soup mug with some soup and a handwritten note signed by them saying, we hope you feel better, or something like that. So again, they post it, they'll be with you forever. Next one is a woman. Maybe her husband was really the one who was dealing with Chewy and ordering all the food. For some reason, he couldn't. She was 9 months pregnant. Just mentioned it in passing to the customer service rep that she's 9 months pregnant and she was having whatever issues and she needs whatever pet food. Our customer service agent, boom, through our wow team, we sent a onesie and a book. I forget what it's called.
What
pet should I get? So pretty powerful when you receive that. I mean, consumers will remember that and they will stay with you for a really long time. This is another one where we like to say we're with the customer and the pet and the pet parent from the minute the pet is born till passing. And if you go online, you'll see a number of examples of this. Usually customers will call if a pet passes. They just ordered a lot of food. Hey, can we get a refund? Our pet just passed. And we immediately give refunds. We say, donate to a shelter. And then usually within a day or two, they'll probably get a bouquet of flowers. Mm. Again, with a signed note from the customer service representative saying, we're really sorry about the passing. And you might say, well, why would you do that? The pet died. Like, they're not really going to order from you anymore. That's bad. That's a waste of money. And well, a couple of things. One is we like to show that we do care and we're there in the good and the bad. Two, most people have multiple pets in their lifetime. I guarantee you, if that person got another pet, they're absolutely ordering from us. And three, right, they're going to post that online. You'll see plenty of videos and on TikTok or whatever that this happened. LinkedIn, it blew up one day. All of a sudden, all the LinkedIn professionals were going nuts about a woman who, you know, we sent flowers to. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions of hits for that one posting. So it goes viral. And then everyone's like, wow, Chewy really cares. So rather buy from Chewy, who really cares about pets, knows about pets, rather than maybe Amazon, where you could just add it to the basket. So it's really powerful, and it makes a huge difference in able to attract and retain new customers and get more sales.
And Terry, Pam has some frontline staff that you utilize for some.
Absolutely.
Purposes.
You have the app, you have the website, et cetera, but there's nothing like when a customer walks in the door, you're going to give the first impression of what is this place all about? And our frontline staff is very much engaged in welcoming people warmly, being observant. Oh, you've got children. Here's some exhibitions that I think your children might enjoy. Here's how you get to them. Oh, and you need to put things in the locker. Here's where you go that. And by the way, on the way out, let me know which of these exhibits you like the most and why. And what that does is the person then, is as they're going through, they're thinking like, ooh, I have to pay attention. I might have to even answer that question. Not the have to, but the good part is it plants a seed and then people start to see things like, oh, why do I like that? Why don't I like that? And you don't have to like or not like, you just appreciate the fact that you're seeing something from a different perspective. So we find that our frontline staff is absolutely tremendously important. No matter how much technology, there's nothing like that human side of it.
And where else have you found the human connection necessary? I think we were talking about PAM programming.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So we have a lot of programming. The education department is one of our biggest. And so we have school kids, by the way. Every Miami-Dade County school child comes to the museum at least once or twice during their experience as a student for free. They are taught by teaching artists. It's practicing artists who are also teachers. And they give a wonderful experience to kids so that they feel and they understand that coming to a museum is an interactive thing. It is one where they're using critical thinking and they're talking about art. We also have a situation where, unusually, when there are bad things that happen in our community, there's tension, et cetera, we have something called art detectives, where the police officers come and they meet with kids who might be trouble or tending toward trouble. And they come to the museum and we use art as the catalyst for discussion. So you might have a particular work, and by using that as the topic, you get these two sides to talk and to get to know each other. And they do that periodically so that it lessens the tension in our community. So that's something that, again, technology can't do.
And so we've talked about the importance of the human connection and also the importance of utilizing technology in a way that can kind of optimize business, right? How do you strike a balance? How do you strike the appropriate balance? Does it depend on industry? Does it depend on the company?
Every company really is a technology company. You just have to leverage it. How do you remain special and relevant? I'm a third generation restaurateur. My grandfather had a bakery. My dad had Chinese restaurants. And when I first started, we were more concerned when a sushi bar would open up across the street from us. But now what we're more concerned about is how Uber is going to change their commission structure. Or we work with Amazon and Whole Foods. When we first started working with Whole Foods, they were artisans with food. But now I deal with financial engineers all day long. So I've had to learn to change my vocabulary and deal with people who look at the world very differently. So I think that the restaurants are known to be the most kind of like resistant to adopting technology. So I think if you want to have any scale, you really need to get comfortable with it. You have to hire digital natives, even general managers now have so much technology that they have to figure out. There's these integrations with the point of sale system. They never quite work right. Your marketing people have to be super savvy on this. Your finance people have to be involved in it. So I think my point of view versus many of the other people today is that we're a small company that has to kind of hire people that have a lot of comfort with the digital components of our business. You know, I'm not sure if that's an answer to the question, but it's a forever change.
Terry, what do you think?
It's not your father's museum, shall we say. Museums now are culture hubs, neighborhood hubs, where people come together for art, for communication, for learning. And when we have our programs there in English and Spanish, our wall didactics are English and Spanish. We often have, depending on the topic, we can also have translations in English, Spanish, and Creole. We have American Sign Language when we do our presentations. So the idea is being inclusive, using technology where you can, but also that hands-on experience. We have Saturdays that are free for families. And I think one of the slides on there shows when you have hands-on experiences for little kids, it's not just the kids that have the enjoyment. It's that relationship that the parent has with their child creating things that they then take home and they put on their refrigerator. And it reminds them of a happy experience they had at a place that brought them together. So you've got that. You've got a situation where you've got living artists. As a contemporary art museum, we don't have a lot of dead artists on our walls. So the good news is that they can come and they speak and they give lectures and they answer questions, so that when you come to one of our presentations, you come away with something. And if you have a question, they'll answer it. You have something you want to have signed. Often our artists will be around, sign things. So it is interactive. It is becoming part of the community and making sure that your mission is consistent, is that you are following your mission, but at the same time, people can come and bring their own mission to you.
So Elliot.
Yeah, I could jump in. The founder of our company, whose name is Ryan Cohn, actually lives not far from here. His vision was creating a neighborhood pet store, but with the convenience, the product selection, and the ease of the online world. Every company does it differently. There's no right or wrong. But it was very focused. We are an online company. We're an e-commerce company. But we wanted to have that human connection that differentiated us from many other companies. This morning, I had a question for Uber. You can't find their telephone number anywhere anymore. You have to do a chat. Got disconnected. I had to retype it. They transferred me to two other people. Then I got something that says, oh, you'll get an email in 6 to 12 hours with your answer. It wasn't the worst thing in the world because it wasn't that important to me, but it was annoying. We took a very different stance, as you all have heard already. On our website, in the packaging that we sent, everywhere you will see our telephone number. We encourage people to call. We want that to happen if you have an issue. You can also chat. You can also email. But it's a much better experience for us if you call. So we try to balance the two. It's not always easy, but it's a competitive advantage for us because it's hard to do, it's expensive, and it's hard to do well. But if you do, it makes a big difference. And it's a little different brick and mortar where you can, in certain ways, control that, although it's not easy at all, as they've mentioned. So we had to be a little creative in how we did that as an online company.
We're closing in on the end, so I want to make sure we save a couple minutes for Q&A. But just one last part, one last question, which is, well, what happens when the tech doesn't work?
Go to the next topic.
As it did.
When it's down, it's catastrophic in our business. You know, like our point of sale systems all run, the kitchen printers all run on technology. So you try to have systems that things can go offline, taking credit cards, but you have to have really good people that can troubleshoot it. It always happens on weekends and holidays and nights. It's never a Monday at 2 p.m.
We're almost at the end of time, so I wanted to save a few minutes. Any questions for our panelists? I see one up front.
Hi, everyone. My name is David Poirier. I'm a corporate attorney. I understand that your industries are relatively consumer-facing, but I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about the impact of technology and its usefulness and how it can improve the experience with respect to a B2B industry.
Our most profitable part of our business that most people don't know is our B2B. We sell sushi to luxury hotels, country clubs, generally it's white label. So if you have or hosting a wedding or a bar mitzvah at the Four Seasons, it's actually Sushi Maki Sushi, but we'll never get credit for it. They call it Four Seasons sushi, but Ritz-Carlton, the Loaves, those are all our clients. You know, the buying decisions are very different. There's a willingness to pay. For us, they don't want any mistakes. They don't want to get yelled at by sushi being late. So when it comes down to how we leverage technology, they don't want to talk to somebody. They just want to have as few clicks as possible. So it's still the same kind of seamless order injection that they want, but I guess the decision-making is very different.
And I saw one in the back.
I wanted to commend you for doing those handwritten notes. I used to do over 100 of them a month to people, but never to pets. To take that to the next level from our previous panel, would you consider using ChatGPT, Midjourney, or whoever AI to create those images of those pets?
I've actually spoken a number of times with, you know, I work with our customer service team. Right now, the answer is no. There's a big difference in the quality of a hand-painted portrait than a computer-generated one. It's not even close today. Maybe down in the future, we would. Today, quality-wise, there's a big difference. We look at everything all the time. So it is possible. But there's something special about having a hand-painted portrait. People love their pets as much as their kids. So when they get that in the mail, they're hanging it up or they're putting it somewhere in their mantle. They love that.
Is it an original painting?
Yes.
I saw one more in the back.
My question actually dovetails with that, about like how you're planning to or currently building AI into the customer experience. You know, perhaps for answering when people when customers call in using an AI response?
We try to respond to everything. We input kind of what the challenge is, and we want to have a unique answer that references it. How do you kind of make it feel like a human was still involved in it? It's getting better, though. It really is.
If it's better for the customer, we'll look at it and use it. But I don't foresee a computer answering, at least anytime soon for us. How many times have you yelled, just give me a representative, right? it could drive you nuts. We will not ever allow that to happen in our business.
And I saw one hand up in the front.
I had a question about your WOW program. See, I worked at the Ritz-Carlton 20 years ago, and we had a WOW budget. Yeah. So a lot of things that you mentioned, I'm like, yeah, when that guy would show up and it was his birthday, he loved Lind chocolates. That was a rating for him. He liked an outdoor table. That was right. And then we had those WOW capabilities as employees to do that. When did you guys start doing that exactly?
They were doing it from the beginning of the company. There was always some facet of that. It's gotten better. It's gotten more sophisticated, more thought in it. But as far as I know, from the beginning of the company, it's a core of the company.
Chewy client for a long time. So you guys are great.
Thanks.
And I saw another hand from Jeff Bast.
I'm overriding the time limit. I just had a question or a comment for Abe because he talked about the problem customer, the one who gives the one-star review. Can you identify that customer before they make the order? If this is somebody who makes one-star reviews, because my guess is somebody who gives a one-star review probably does it, you know, multiple times. If you can identify them on the way in and alert the restaurant, hey.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So that, no. But on Uber now, there's ways that they identify people that always complain that the French fries are missing. They actually do kind of flag people that always complain about an item missing. So it is getting smarter now. So when Uber says that you forgot the bubble tea or the wasabi, they automatically just discount the order completely. But they've gotten much better, and it's all machine learning that they've done it, that they've identified these folks. And I know from the rideshare, if you're a good tipper and a five-star and a good client, you get better kind of service. So it's wild what they're able to know.
Thank you so much for coming out. Thank you for the support. We had fun. I hope you did. I learned a lot. Again, the objective of this forum is to build better citizens and build a stronger community. You know, our theme today is connections, making connections. I hope you came away from today feeling a little enlightened and made some more connections.
For more information on this show and other resources, visit fastamron.com and connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram at FastAmron.